Blog Talk Radio.
Bringing voices to power. Grassroots mouthpiece.
It's the rap. Hip hop. The rap.
They can't stop us. United Voices with Sherry Saunders. Sundays 5 to 7. The Child Support Hustle is real. You can catch the Child Support Hustle show Saturdays from 5 to 7 with co-hosts Drew D and Kenya R. The Child Support Hustle is real. Bringing voices to power. Catch me on HuntsvilleBlack.com. That's HuntsvilleBlack.com. Let your voice be heard on HuntsvilleBlack.com. Don't miss the Grassroots Mouthpiece Show, Tuesdays from 8 to 10, bringing voices to power.
To the rail, hip hop.
Bringing voices to power.
Okay, in this episode of Bringing Voices to Power, I talk with guest Michael Richard about the inhumanity of a complete Affordable Care Act repeal. Michael also will talk about how taking health care away from 20 million people or more is not only resigning a huge number of people to a death sentence, it's just not in line with the message of Christianity that the GOP pushes. Michael Richard would also talk about the impact on himself and his family. Good morning, Mr. Richard. How's it going?
I'm doing all right, sir. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good. So tell us about your feelings about a complete repeal of the Affordable Care Act that the Republicans have sort of like smeared as Obamacare.
Well, that's the thing that I find to be amusing, and unfortunately it's become very, very sad that a bunch of the people who voted against Obamacare, who voted against Hillary Clinton, wanting to maintain this, never realized that Obamacare was actually the Affordable Care Act. They voted against something because the Republicans very, very smartly renamed it. You know, the same people who hated Obamacare, Obamacare is what's been keeping them alive.
Yeah, this is what I – this is you're exactly right. You hit the nail on the head with that, and that goes to not only about the Affordable Care Act, but about everything that they're doing. What they're doing, and Donald Trump is doing it good with his 37%. He's got them good. You know, they're doing a psychological warfare program against their own base. The one they're playing to their deepest feelings and fears, you know, and gonna pass some laws to make them think that hey, we're carrying your agenda out, but they can't carry it all out. But I just found that amazing how they smeared it with Obamacare because at the time people were hating Obama. See, you know, so that gives them life. So they've been running this game on their supporters all this time.
Yeah, who are unfortunately the people who are going to end up paying for this? You know, just the people who work and live. I'm sorry?
No, I said exactly. That's what's so amazing about this.
Yeah, I'm just astounded, and especially, you know, living in Alabama, which is primarily a very conservative state, you know, just understanding the what's going through people's heads right now, I don't get it. I really don't understand, you know, the people who continue to vote for the same people that are keeping them down over and over again.
Well, that goes back to, if we look at it, Lyndon B. Johnson, what he said, he talked about that a long time ago. Go back and check one of his quotes out. He said that if you can convince the lowest white man that he's better than the best black man, hell, you can pick his pockets and he won't even know it. He said all you got to do is give him somebody to hate and you can pick him clean. And that's exactly the same program they've been running since Johnson said that.
Well, you know, and consistently over the years, there have been checks and balances in place. You know, what we're looking at now with all three branches of government, you know, being controlled by the same party is, you know, for years we've been able to sort of keep an eye on ourselves, you know, who's got whose hand in the cookie jar. But at this point, things are about to happen to the American public, and there's not going to be anything we can do about it. You know, I keep saying, you know, I would love to sit down with my senators, Shelby and Strange. I would love to sit down with my Congressman Brooks and just look him in the eye and say, well, why do I have to die?
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's a question that's reasonable enough to be answered by the man, you know, who's going to sign the piece of paper that ensures it.
Yeah.
And it's not just me, you know. There are millions of other people in this country that are guaranteed a death sentence without this case.
Yeah. If they had any type of heart or empathy for anybody, he could answer that and be like, I don't want you to die. But I think some of these people like Mo Brooks, Shelby, and don't let me forget Arthur Orr over in Decatur, he's becoming a little monster himself. But if you can get people like that, they may even look you in your face. They've been so corrupted, they would probably look you in your face and start explaining away the reason why that you have to. You know, they'll, you know, go into the, well, we got to cut this, we got to do that. They will not answer your real question. They will talk about how bad the bill is. That's, to them, that means more important, what the bill costs and who it empowers, like pharmaceuticals and a few companies like Brewcoast, Bushiel, who have a monopoly. That's who they're really working for, and that's who they've sold out We the People for. So they probably could look you in your eye and probably start explaining away the reason why they have to do it like this instead of answering, because they're political cowards.
Well, and ultimately, this is just a personal opinion of mine. What I don't understand is why we have turned healthcare into a for-profit business. Healthcare should be as far removed from a profitable business as there is. You know, if you take away the profit from it, then all of a sudden you don't have all the red tape. You don't have the massive insurance companies. You don't have the pharmaceutical companies, you know, arguing this, that, and the other. You have better regulation. You know, once we can, if we could ever manage to get the profit out of healthcare, you know, that would become very significant into ensuring that everybody had it.
Yeah, exactly. I had a guy on my show, Vic Naumoff, who wrote a book about the healthcare, and we talked about that on one of my shows. It's because of profit. It's the mass profit they make by having these few monopolies.
Well, you know, and I think we're all familiar with, you know, how, and not just necessarily healthcare insurance, but how insurance in general works. You know, for example, if you wreck your car and you submit an insurance claim, your insurance company's first response immediately is to deny that claim. Make it as difficult a process as it possibly can be, and eventually people will just roll over and give up. And that's what's happening with the healthcare system. And the part of the healthcare system, when you do that, when it involves people's lives, is eventually they'll die waiting. You know, lots of people, unfortunately, will spend what little is left of their lives fighting or trying to get, you know, healthcare paid for that they desperately need, you know, and they'll die before it even happens. And the insurance companies bank on this.
Yeah, and they'll die basically, you know, from not having the insurance and not having the money to take care of themselves. I think there's, you know, and this is not lining up with any type of political figure, because I really haven't heard many around in this area talk about it. But there should be universal health care for the simple reason that every industrialized nation has it. Every nation, big nation, our main partners have it. And we call ourselves a superpower, but we don't even share that our own people. We're super damn stupid, you know, at how we spend mostly on military and fighting people. Yeah, we're mostly just stupid. Everybody should have free health care if you're an American. If we call ourselves champion democracy, freedom, and all good things around the world, what are we doing in our own backyard? I mean, it's just ridiculous.
Exactly.
America's been a hypocrite. You know, I love America, but we've been some hell of a hypocrite. There's solid-ass evidence for it all throughout history. And with this health care, you know, here we go again.
Well, you know, once it stops being people, once it stops being you and I who are being insured, who are receiving care, and once you and I just become a number in a ledger somewhere, you know, that's when, you know, that's what's happened is we've depersonalized, you know, our health care. You know, to be completely honest with you, for one of my doctors to make a profit under, you know, the current programs, you know, she will probably have to see a ridiculous amount of patients. She could probably not pick me out of the lineup, to be honest. You know, she has to do that to manufacture a living for herself, which I understand. But then again, you know, that takes away the quality of care from me and anyone else who sees her. You know, we're not only discussing whether or not, you know, but people go on and on and on about, you know, the United States has so much better health care. Absolutely it does, if you're in the top 1%.
Yeah.
You know, but every you know, normal guy like you and I who goes in, you know, we have to sit, we have to wait, you know, and unfortunately, you know, we have to die before anybody bothers to see us.
Yeah, and see, they don't, I mean, at least, you know, we don't have universal health care. Give us the same thing they get.
Well, and that has been the watching the news as of late, and the people trying to sell this new healthcare plan, you know, they all say, well, everyone has access to healthcare. You know, like Warren Buffett says, and other people are throwing it right now. Well, you know, Marcus, you and I both have access to a Rolls Royce. It doesn't mean we can afford a Rolls Royce. It means we have access to it.
That's exactly what I'm talking about. And that goes back to, you know, like they said, they want to eliminate a middle class. You can do it like that too, you know. You can hurt them in all angles. Don't, you know, because you see how they fight raises. You see, we had a whole city. We had Birmingham wanting to give everybody a raise in that city. And you see, the government came in and stopped that.
Well,
why wouldn't they
want
about a raise? And I mean, you can have access, but the more money you have is gonna, the money you have, by their standards, is gonna determine what type of access and care that you get. Like you said, your doctor could pick you out of a lineup.
Which, you know, is a shame, you know, because people are, like I said, people are falling through the cracks when it comes to healthcare. You know, I think everyone nowadays has some sort of story, you know, involved where a doctor or a nurse or somebody, you know, in a hospital possibly messed up with them specifically, you know, and accidents happen. But, you know, when it takes so many people, for a doctor who is already, you know, is as busy as they can be just to make a living, and I understand doctors do pretty well, but the doctors aren't even able to do this. The red tape and the bureaucracy in between the doctor and the patient is astounding to me.
Wow.
You know, and if you take it, you know, if you went to a single payer, you know, then everyone would have the same access to insurance, but by golly, that would just be way too easy now, wouldn't it? The Republicans.
It would be way too easy and way too generous. It would hurt the people who love the profit off of it.
Exactly. Well, you know, again, back to for-profit medicine. For-profit medicine, just nothing good comes from it. And I think we've proven that. But, you know, again, the people who are for it will sit here and they'll tout all the benefits of it. And it sounds all nice and good on paper, but it does not actually work in practice.
You're right on that, and that's what, you know, for profit, the health industry is bad for people because you're going to need people to be sick. So that's why you're going to let these drugs come through. And you see these commercials, the drug to treat, you know, it could be a drug to treat stomach, bowel something, but it's going to cause 14 different side effects. That's why you see companies like that slide through. But you can't even let a natural plant like cannabis, the cannabis plant, hemp and marijuana, you can't have that, a natural plant that's been used, you know, over thousands and thousands of years. It goes back to the beginning of time. But you can pass and have all these companies on TV selling you all day long, take this for this, and then they go and speed up and list out 15 different side effects. That can get through, but a plant, you can't have a plant. You could go to jail. That's ridiculous. Alabama's so backwards and behind the times.
This
and it's
true.
It's not an accident. There's people, big pharma, and people connected to our government who really don't want this. You know, cannabis is going to hurt their industry, and it's going to help the healthcare industry. You know, it's going to hurt the prison industrial complex because places where they have legalized cannabis, crime goes down, overdoses goes down. They're using cannabis to wean people off of meth and other hard narcotic drugs. So the big pharma is going to be hit, and if people with crime go down, then the prison industrial complex is going to be hit. You know, people should really go check out the Alabama crime statistics on prisons and look how much time they're giving out for people possessing these plants that's been used for thousands of years and legal in about 26 states and half the country. Alabama needs to just stop it. So,
it is Alabama, though.
Yeah, what's your feelings on medicinal cannabis, though, and how would I know you, Ben, you talked about some health issues that you were fighting, and I want you to talk about the idea of using cannabis versus medicine. First of all, tell us everybody what, you know, why you're so passionate about this healthcare. You know, if you care to share, you know what you got going on, and also tell them about a GoFundMe account because you need people like Richard on the front line who are actually going through this in real time to be out there telling their stories.
Well, let's see. Summarized short version, July of 2016, I hit the hospital and was diagnosed, subsequently admitted for a month. I was diagnosed with end-stage liver disease, cirrhosis, and acute acetaminophen poisoning, meaning that over a period of years, taking so much acetaminophen versus anything alternative or alternate, you know, for pain management. I had been taking, you know, Tylenol, ibuprofen, aspirin, over-the-counter pain medicine. Instead, I'd been trying to avoid any of the narcotics just because the stigma and the addiction part of it. I ended up toasting my liver very badly to the point where I'm going to need a transplant somewhere within the next year to 2 years. So my life changed rather rapidly, you know, but, you're speaking of marijuana to that point. I've had several of my doctors, and trust me, now that this all happened, I do have several who have spoken to the effect that marijuana would be beneficial for me. However, me being on a transplant list to receive an organ, the doctors on that list pretty much function, as an entity nationwide. So testing positive for any drug whatsoever is a big no-no. And once you test positive for something on a transplant list, you never get put on the list. So, yeah, I mean, I'm kind of damned if I do and damned if I don't. The marijuana would help me, but if I smoke it, then I will never get a liver. Or even take the oil if I test positive in any way.
Not only that, you should check into this. Check into this because I had discussed on another show, I think I had Morgan Fox on from the Washington, D.C.-based Marijuana Policy Project, and we talked about how cannabis actually helps fight rejection of donated organs. Check that out. I mean, I think there's some solid stuff out of it might be UCLA, but it's some solid stuff out there. So that's ridiculous. They should be encouraging you. You know, while you're waiting for a transplant, you should be smoking cannabis. If cannabis has been proven by, you know, got some solid science behind it, that it helps in organ rejection during transplant.
Oh, but of course, you know, that would take the profit margin out of it again, because, you know, after I get my transplant, which, you know, hopefully sooner than later, I will be forced to take rejection medication for the rest of my life, which ranges somewhere between $4,000 and $7,000 a month for the rest of my life. Now, you're not going to get that much, you know, for any way, shape, or form for cannabis. You know, so the profit margin in cannabis is not there. The regulatory system's not there. But I tell you what, once they can figure out how to manage it, the pharmaceutical companies will be all over it.
Yeah, well, you know, they're already all over it, you know, although it's illegal in some states. But like I said, I think we're doing pretty good. But since we're halfway there, we need to go, you know, all the way legal for the whole country. I mean, there's 26 states who have it legal in some form or another.
Well, you know, I mean, again, when it comes down to, for example, everybody's talking about, you know, the legalization of the marijuana itself for recreational usage. You know, right now, why don't we just get it through for medicinal usage? You know, heroin is completely and totally illegal, obviously, for, you know, for some pretty good reasons. But, you know, opiate pills, you know, morphine, you know, fentanyl, OxyContin, whatever, you know, all those things are completely and totally legal. You know, why don't we at least take marijuana and legalize it in a way for medicinal purposes so people don't have to suffer? You know, we'll take our time, you know, getting it on to, you know, out for use if that's, you know, the case. But there is a possible way to integrate it into healthcare. Then by all means, we should just be flying all over.
Yeah, we should be flying all over. And another thing in Alabama, you know, we got all this farmland. Anywhere that you grow corn, you can grow good cannabis. And the thing about cannabis, and look, I'm going to let you know who else is going to be hurt by cannabis also, believe it or not, would be Monsanto. because cannabis doesn't need any pesticides. It's a natural pesticide. It kills everything else, but it replenishes. It puts a lot of nitrogen and oxygen into the soil when it decomposes. But it has a knack for killing out weeds and pesticides. And pests don't bother cannabis.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
Like I said, my knowledge on it is limited currently. But you know what I do know is it, from a healthcare point of everything that I've read and the people I've talked about it with, that you know it's a definite bonus. It would be beneficial for people who are you know especially you see all the time studies on how it affects children with seizure disorders, you know, older people with dementia, so on and so forth. You know, obviously, if we're seeing benefits from it, it should be explored in Alabama, but we are in Alabama, so we unfortunately will probably be last.
Yeah, we'll be last, and I don't. I tell everybody that Bentley's proposal to build these super prisons, that's going to be a blow to that movement. But that's why that movement needs to go on and push now as hard as ever. They need to be getting money from outside the states, all these marijuana industries. They got 26 Alabama. You see, that's why I say people, Democrats and people like that don't have their shit together. If they had their stuff together, they would be getting in contact with these organizations saying that they want to bring the legalization here in Alabama. And we got to focus on a few areas that I've heard a couple of politicians talk about. Well, one in particular talked about it. And but we need to do something like that to get them to start lobbying here, paying other people to lobby here, because 26 states has it legal in some form or another. We know what it does to soldiers. I mean, hell, we always fight in wars. And the soldiers had to fight to get this plant. I mean, it's just totally ridiculous. It's the profit, like you said. Everything's all about the profit.
Yeah, I mean, well, you know, and there is a significant amount of profit to be made, you know, with cannabis. I mean, look at Colorado, who have a money surplus right now because of it, and that's awesome. Again, you know, not only would it decriminalize it, but back to health care. Yet again, there are so many positive health benefits. You know, it's unimaginable. And, you know, again, I know very little about, you know, how it works. All I know is every doctor who's, you know, willing to talk about it that I've ever spoken to, you know, talks it, you know, that it's the best thing, you know, that they've ever seen. You know, I believe that it, at the very least it needs to be, you know, out on the table for conversation, you know, and have a real chance to come through, at least from a medical point of view.
Yeah. Well, they need to open it up. They got it in Alabama, but I think it's just focused on seizures. I don't know why they just, you know, they slow. They're dragging their feet. They already know the plant's been in use for tens of thousands of years, but it's before we even got Lenny's Law. They knew all about this plant, but they had money to give UAB and I don't know, maybe one other college to do a study on something we already know about, been knowing about for 10,000 years. What, we don't need to do any more studies. The studies are done. The usage has been enacted. We all know why they're fighting it. They're fighting it because of the prison industrial complex and Big Pharma. That's all it is.
Yeah, it just all seems silly to me. I mean, if there's something out there that could help people, then, you know, by all means, let's do it. You know, circling back completely to the healthcare issue again, you know, I would love to be able to just sit down with my congressman and have them just be honest. And that's where I feel, you know, we have a problem here is our congressmen, they serve too many masters now, and they need to be serving us.
Yes, that's so true. And speaking of politics, but it's going to be hard. It's going to be hard, you know. I mean, you get a little, get somebody like Mo Brooks, Richard Shelby. You send them up to Washington, D.C., you know. They get up there, they get brainwashed and they get blinded by the power. And they'll do whatever and crush whoever to get that power and to please their masters.
Well, and again, you know, they spend so much time just running for election. You know, I was in a small protest recently down at the Von Braun Center, or in front of the Von Braun Center, you know, trying to get Mo Brooks to come out and answer some questions regarding, basically regarding why he refuses to speak to us at all. And, you know, again, he will not come out. He will not have a discussion. We are subversive, and we are dangerous. And I don't know if you've ever seen one of our protests, but we are usually about 50 people walking around with signs and canes. Yeah, we are far from a big, you know, crazy mob.
Yeah. But see, he's using the same type of language and strategy that Trump is going to use. Mo Brooks is like Donald Trump.
He's always spouting off something about somebody, whatever the subject is. I don't care if you're talking about African Americans. He's spouted out his mouth in disrespect to African Americans before, to immigrants, Mexicans. Remember, he wanted a fence to shock them with lethal force. It's basically the damn electric chair for trying to reach freedom and something better for your family. You know, so he wants to shock them, electrocute them at the border for trying to achieve that, whatever we stand for. And then he said all this stuff about Muslims, three shows about Islamic extremism with some scholars from Huntsville and people who run the Islamic Center. And like I said, Mo Brooks, he's another Donald Trump. He's a little Alabama homegrown Donald Trump. That's all he is.
Well, have you invited him on the show?
Anybody's open to come on this show. I know they know about it. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to come. They're not going to have to come on my show. And let's get into this right here. I was on the stream, and somebody was talking about Dale Jackson. He was on the stream too, and somebody said, "Well, I should go on Dale's show." And I said, "Yeah, I'd love to go on his show, but first we're going to have a debate. We're going to have a serious talk because I really don't think he knows nothing. I think he's just a radio performer." I said, "Then we can come back and we can do shows where we're shouting back and forth, throwing out, you know, little quick quibs on, you know, political quibs and stuff. We'll do that next time and from then on. But first, I want to establish that he doesn't know shit." You know, he's got really like a ignorant thought type pattern like them. But I think he doesn't really have that in his heart. I think he has mastered on using that to build an audience, and that is smooth. That is good. But I'm not, you know, coming on to boost his ratings with some shouting back and forth with me, you know, the grassroots mouthpiece. But we can go on there first, or we can do 1 hour to see what he knows, and then we can do a little cut-up acting stuff later. I'm not into acting. I'm talking real damn facts and real shit on my shows. So most of them won't come, but I've had some politicians brave enough to come, you know, and we didn't have no
back. I'd love to at least read the letter that you received from Mo Brooks's office, though, as to why he can't do it. I think it would serve you well. I mean, what's the worst that happened? You know, he shows up and wants to talk. That would be great.
Well, I don't know. That would be great on my part and his part too, because I have actively campaigned with people who have run against him. I'm pretty sure, and I'm almost certain he is aware of me. I've, you know, like I said, I did three shows on Islamic extremism, and that's on this network, you know, that's on this network right here, and they were hardcore shows about his some of his acts and what he's been saying. I know he's heard these shows. Out of the hundreds of people that listened, I know he was probably one of him or his people listening. They, you know, these people, they keep a watchful eye on anybody, on anybody making any moves, anybody saying things, anything that might hurt their, you know, their position. Because there's people like Mo Brooks, they're obsessed with this position, you know, they're obsessed with that. So if he see crazy talk like that in Washington, D.C., he's going to feel like he's got to add his into it. Hey, I'm just as crazy as Trump. But he would be exposed. Well, he would get exposed on my show. I would expose him on my show. He can come on this show. We can talk policy if he want to. But I really want to talk about Mo Brooks, the person, and some of the things he has said about minorities and other people of other religions. I know his policy. You know, I know that. So he probably don't want to face nobody that was this. You know, because a lot of people in the media, that the established media, even some of these local TV networks, there's a lot of shit they're not going to cover. There's a lot of stuff they're not going to talk about, even though the community is talking about it. Even the community knows, because they don't want to offend somebody in power. But that's not my damn job. I didn't come forward for that. You see what I'm saying? I'm here with the truth, you know, shoving it down their throats, and that's just exactly how it's going to be. But he won't come on to shows like that. He'll come on to a show that, you know, them folks are not going to disrespect him or ambush him with some type of question that he can't answer.
Exactly.
He's not going to do it. But it would be good. I have him on all the time. I've had Laurel Barron come on. I love having Laurel Barron on. He shoots it straight. And he has a good plan on how Democrats can rebuild the party from the bottom up. You know, you got to start local and build it up bottom up.
Well, since Democrats have played a significant role in this state, it's a shame, you know, but we do have to start at the grassroots level again. You know, and again, that even comes down to, you know, you and I have talked about it. When it comes down to things like health care, you know, we have become such a desperate group of people that we're acting on our own self-interest. You know, even those of us, even the good guys, are acting on their own self-interest that we are unable to work as a group. You know, we have to stop panicking. We have to work together. You know, maybe my health care issues, unfortunately, I slipped through the cracks and, you know, it doesn't work out for me. You know, that is a real possibility. But, you know, maybe with the work that we put in, you know, maybe it works out better for my children, my grandchildren someday.
Yeah.
But trust me, I'm not going to die without kicking and screaming a little bit.
I know that's right. And that's one thing, too, about working together. It's a lot of groups in Alabama. You know, we got the Pantsuit Nation. You know, they got a thing everywhere. You got Resist, you got Indivisible. These groups need to be, I said this at the state capitol about 2 weeks ago, they need to be coordinating together. I mean, they haven't, I mean, it's good to see everybody do something once and now, you know, on the same day in their city, but sometimes we need to do like a North Alabama, cut the state in half and all those Resist and Indivisible groups within that half do a major event in the middle, in the center. Everybody come to the center of that, you know, part of the state. It's just not enough organization and communication with all these groups. They're disjointed. A lot of things they're doing are overlapping each other. That's the bad part. That's wasted energy when you overlap the certain things.
Well, we also have to figure out a way to get media coverage. Media coverage, you know, we need the attention. You know, that's why I'm here. You know, that's why we do this. You know, that's why, you know, I call Mel Brooks' office every day. Mo Brooks. I actually like Mel Brooks. You know, that's why I call Richard Shelby's office every day. That's why I call Luther Strange's office every day. You know, I want them to come out. I want them basically to act as the people who work for me, because that's exactly what they do. They work for me.
But that's, you know, like I said, power corrupts, though.
Well, we're seeing that in force right now. And unfortunately, you know, again, you know, the reason I'm here, people are going to die. And I don't know how many it's going to take before, you know, the United States public wakes up and says, no, this is not what we were promised.
I think we're in a situation where they want us to die. All the moves they're making, they want you to die. I mean, we don't need to skirt around that. They want you to die. They're not doing anything that's going to help you live. They're cutting, you know. They're making it more difficult. Like I said, everybody in America should have free health care, because we've brought freedom. You say we brought freedom and democracy to the entire world. We can't even bring damn health care to our own citizens. I mean, that's so hypocritical. But we don't, because there's money to be made.
Well, yeah, there's no profit in curing people.
No, the money's in the sickness.
Oh yeah.
I know this transplant is going to cost a whole lot of money. How can people help you? You know, get some of your expenses taken care of.
Well, fortunately, insurance has been helpful to some degree, but we are still unfortunately way behind the eight ball when it comes to expenses. You know, for day to day living, especially medications. Even with my copays with my insurance, my medications cost me anywhere from $1,200 to $1,700 a month out of pocket. You know, just the day-to-day stuff, you know, it becomes very expensive. Again, they can, if anybody wants to share or donate, it's greatly appreciated. It's, again, my name is, it's actually, and I'm sorry I let it go this long, but it's Michael Richard. It's a good old Louisiana thing. But,
okay.
But it's, if you go to GoFundMe and type in Michael Richard Liver, I'm right down there. It is HTTP, was it :// www.gofundme.com/ Michael, capitalized M, transplant, capitalized T.
Okay, that's it. And I really think and hope people can donate and help you because, you know, you speak very good and you're knowledgeable of the subject and you're going through it and you're passionate about it. You know, I hope they can help you continue to speak out like that. And you're welcome to come back on this show anytime and talk about these healthcare issues and any other issue.
I would love that. You know, and again, people, if you can't afford, like I said, to actually donate, sharing it, spreading the word, you know, that works almost, you know, as well. And again, forgive me, I hate to push it too hard, but people don't understand that every little bit helps, you know, especially when it comes down to, you know, things like medication. You would be surprised, you know, if, you know, 10 people donating $5, you know, that that keeps me alive for another few days. So,
yeah.
And, you know, that's just how simple it's become. I've spoken with my doctor and I said, this is funny. I said, you know, if I just stop taking my medication, what'll happen? And my doctor said, you'll be dead in a month. I said, so without the kindness of others, you know, without a healthcare system, you know, at least right now I have one. You know, and that is my biggest fear, you know, that I would be dead in a month. I'm feeling okay today. But, you know, if someone were to take away my insurance completely and my medication, lock, stock, and barrel, I'm dead within just a few weeks. That is a very sobering thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, I wonder how many people, I'm sure that there are probably tens of thousands, if not hundreds of thousands of people, you know, who are in the same boat right now. You know, we live literally month to month, trying to make sure, you know, we make it another one until there's either a cure or a treatment or whatever.
Yeah, and we're all going to be fighting with you, too.
Mom.
Richard.
Yes, sir.
It's been great having you, man. I want you to come back on so we can discuss this further.
Absolutely.
Yeah, because people need to hear this, man, from regular, normal, everyday people. This thing is going to affect everybody. And I
Marcus,
hope,
I would love to come on.
I would hope Mo Brooks would answer his phone.
Yeah, well, like I said, here's an open line for him. You know, Mo Brooks, I'm here all day. Feel free to give me a call.